this case is the appeal from a 12B6 decision dismissing two claims. One was a Section 301 claim. The second one was a Warren claim. I'd like to address the 301 claim initially. In that situation, I think the judge was just wrong in terms of her decision. It's been the law since the Smith case that an individual can sue his or her employer under a collective bargaining agreement. That case started this trend.
The theory was breach of the fair representation was another 301 claim brought against both the employer and the union.
That's not the Smith case, Your Honor. That's the question.
That's the basis of the 301 claim. That's what I understood it to be.
No, no.
The breach of the duty of fair rep.
No, because we did not bring a duty of fair representation case in this matter.
That is the 301.
Yeah, that is the 301.
The 301 case is against the employer itself, and that's why I started off by talking.
There was no claim against the union.
There was no claim against the union made, because, and if I can go through, Smith started it in 1962. The next part of that chronology, if you will, went to, with regard to this case, Republic Steel versus Maddox. In that matter, the situation was presented that the plaintiff attempted to sue the employer under the collective bargaining agreement, as we did here. But the court dealt with the situation where that particular plaintiff did not attempt to go through the collective bargaining agreement procedure. And indeed, if the court would look at the determination from the
indication of record that those bargaining procedures were exhausted, I was looking in vain for any
evidence that they went to both places. It was not exhausted, and our position is that one does not have to exhaust, one has to attempt. And indeed, that's what the court said in Republic Steel.
I couldn't see where it went beyond step one or maybe step two. As I understand the process, step one is file agreements. Step two is some communication between the union and the employer. And step three is a face-to-face meeting with the business rep and the employer's rep and the employees. Is that correct?
Essentially, that's correct.
Now, is there any evidence in the record as to whether step three occurred?
There's no evidence in the record because we never could determine that. What happened in this matter was Ms. Johnson and Mr. Primes worked at this particular institution for approximately 4.5 to 4 years. In January, the institution for which they worked ended up being taken over by the defendant in this case. In January 2012, they were called in and told that they were no longer able to.
They didn't pass the background check, right?
Allegedly, they didn't pass the background check. So they were terminated.
Isn't
that
the reason given?
That was the reason given initially. And if you look at the excerpt of record, when Ms. Johnson and ultimately Mr. Pons asked for their personnel record, what they got back was a letter saying, oh, we made a mistake, and this is like 3 and 5 months later, we made a mistake. You were not terminated. You were laid off, and you could come back. Now, can I go back to you?
But at that point, the company had given more notices to
those
who continued in the employ of the company after January.
That's,
and they were actually laying substantial numbers of employees.
That's what we sort of understand.
Well, what if he almost lost the contract?
They lost the contract, but it was over an extended period of time where people were laid off, as far as we can determine.
Well, I think we're sort of dancing around what I think is the heart of the case here, which is whether or not the termination or layoff, whatever you want to call it, that occurred in January, meant that your clients never went back to work for Keolis, and the layoffs that I was just speaking about occurred in May. So why would they be entitled to notices under Warren? Why would the employer have an obligation to do anything with regard to people that they parted company with in January?
Well, there certainly isn't any case law on this that we can find. But the issue being, if they were not terminated for cause, and the statute says that is an exemption. In other words, if you were terminated for cause, then you have no warrant claim. If indeed, I'm trying to get there, Your Honor.
Somebody is not working for the company, is still an employee, in virtue of something that happened in May that you claim has retroactive effect to January. Isn't that your argument?
The test is whether there was...
I'm sure I understand your argument, then I'll apply the test. Is that what you're urging?
Well, that's what I'm urging on the court to look at with regard to the warrant claim, is that these people had an expectation to come back to work because they were going through.
And what evidence would they have had between January and May that they could come back to work at some future time?
Well, ultimately, the letter from the vice president saying, oh, you weren't terminated.
Then we are back to a retroactivity argument. Well, you make it, isn't it? Because there's no other evidence.
There is evidence that they were essentially considered to be laid off, not terminated.
They didn't know that. Well, it's been in January through May. The company didn't think that.
Well,
it wasn't until May that the company apparently changed its position.
Well, certainly that isn't clear at all. Exactly. That's when the company indicated to them.
The company said in May, we're going to consider this to be a layoff rather than a termination.
That's correct.
And it'll indicate to any future employer that you would have been eligible for rehire. That's what the letter says.
The letter indicates to them.
Okay.
That's correct.
That is the evidence on which your claim relies.
Indeed. But again, going back to the statutory duty, is there a reasonable expectation for recall?
But how did they have that expectation?
To have that expectation, or our argument is that expectation is when they attempted to go through the grievance procedure, they felt that the termination was improper and that they would be returned to their position.
If that was the case, why didn't they complete the grievance procedure?
They attempted to. But then they were gone, and then the company disappeared, and the union stopped doing stuff as far as one could tell.
Can I ask, what is the burden of proof?
If you want to be back in court,
Your Honor.
For both, to obtain essentially what could be gotten under both statutes, 60 days worth of back pay and benefits under the Warren Act, or the same type of relief under the Section 301 claim.
I'd like to ask you a question.
Certainly.
If we assume, for purposes of your argument, that the layoff in fact occurred in January, it wasn't a termination, so you adopt your position for the layoff, what would be the evidence that that layoff was related to a mass layoff that occurred in May? What would be the
Well, if one looks, Your Honor, at the letter from the vice president, she talks about the layoffs occurring during that period, both the letter to Mr. Primes and to Ms. Johnson, and that those were the periods where the layoffs were taking place. We're talking about the warrant. Are you talking
about the LMRA, the 301 claim?
The 301 claim, the 6-month statute of limitation is only for hybrid actions. This was not a hybrid action. This was an action under Smith against the employer. That is a 4-year statute of limitations.
There's a question, though. You've run over your time. I'd like to hear from you.
Certainly, Your Honor.
Please support Robert Fulton for defendant Emily. Let me just deal with the easy issue quickly. This is clearly a hybrid case. The cases he is citing deal with an employer being sued by not a union member, but by some other party. The law has been consistent both in this circuit and the United States Supreme Court for the last 30 years. And in this kind of case, you have to allege, you don't have to necessarily sue the union for failing to represent. They did not do that here. They had two opportunities. In their reply brief, they said, we really don't want to amend that claim. They can court error as a matter of law. I want to talk about what they did because I think they're out on the statute of limitations.
Yes.
They're out on the statute of limitations in any event. Judge Whaley, you asked, I think, the appropriate question for purposes of the warrant claim. I have not read and have not heard anything until just now that what they're now saying is, well, we had a reasonable expectation of recall. And that is clearly not the case for the following reason. Number one, they have not alleged, nor have they said that they would allege, that where they were initially working and were displaced in January is the same plant that was later the subject of the mass layoff in May of 2012. They have not alleged, or they said they would, that it's the same revenue contract that was in place in May of 2012 as opposed to when they lost their jobs in January of 2012. But more importantly, the letter does not say that they were laid off due to lack of work and therefore had a reasonable expectation of recall. They said, you are laid off subject to rehire within Keolis generally, which means that if at some point they want to apply for a job where they were not disqualified by virtue of their criminal conviction, or if the period of time consistent with Keolis' policy elapsed, that they would become eligible again. But then they were eligible for rehire. But that's not saying that they were laid off in January of 2012 for lack of work and then had recall rights within 6 months thereafter at a different facility under a different revenue contract.
The time is different and the reason is different.
Yes, ma'am.
What is the reason? Why did the employer change the nomenclature so that they weren't terminated but were laid off?
It's not in the record, Your Honor, but here's the reason. They were not terminated for cause. They were disqualified from working under the new revenue contract because that new revenue customer said, to work under this contract, you can't have a felony conviction. So they were technically eligible for rehire in another position that, whereby their criminal conviction did not
change. So it was the city that was imposing the criminal conviction.
Yes. And so the judge clearly, the lower court concluded, the reason why you were let go in January 2012, whether you call it a termination or layoff, had no causal connection or nexus with why those other individuals 5 months later permanently lost their jobs due to a loss of work. And so I think even though the Collins case is not right on point, it does rely on that language. They have to allege, and they for nothing, that they would do that the reason why they lost their jobs was related to or as a consequence of the later plant closure in May of 2012. They allege consistently and have asserted here in their briefs, the reason why we lost our jobs was because we had criminal convictions and we failed to pass a criminal background check. And so there's no causal connection between why they were let go in 2012 and why those other people were the subject of a mass layoff in May of 2012 as well. And so I think that's really the issue. And again, they didn't allege it. They didn't assert in the brief. The first time I heard it was today. And so really, they have not indicated in response to the judge's questions what facts would I allege that would, in good faith, state that we had a reasonable expectation of recall to the facility that was the subject of the mass layoff in May when we were let go in January of 2012. Thank you.
Essentially, what you're asking us to do, I think, is to extrapolate from the letter that had they known, then they would have had a reasonable expectation of rehire from January to
May. Well, the issue is 12B6 situation. The court, the district court initially did not dismiss the warrant claim. And it's our position. With regard to that, we didn't get an opportunity to address this situation.
Don't have to be able to appear in good faith that they had that reasonable expectation, and I don't see how they could if they didn't know about the change that didn't occur for 5 years.
Going through the grievance process, they felt that they were terminated improperly, and if that were. And again, the evidence, the indicia of that is the two letters that said no, that didn't happen. Again, with regard to the warrant act, the court initially did not dismiss that claim.
Look at all that. Why they gave you leave to a man? I'm a district judge, so I said, or something like that. And he had a chance to do it, and a man to do it, but according to counsel, they haven't done it to the day. But in the end, there was just a nexus between those two events that would have made the lights survive. And it sounds like you said, well, I want to win again. It's one man third time. But you're not showing what you would have done to justify the amendment. If you certainly wonder what's going to last now, it might justify an amendment I don't see.
Well, Judge Wiley, you are just a court judge. If you look at the order doesn't say to amend with regard to the Warren claim. It says amend, it's the 301 claim is dismissed with leave to amend that claim. It's not the Warren claim at all. So, the Warren claim, the court, I think, misspoke when it indicated, and as you have indicated, there was an opportunity to amend. Or even the necessity to amend, given what the district court said initially. So that's it is a second bite at the apple. It was that this would be the opportunity to, we're saying we should have had an opportunity to address that.
But what would you allege on the Warren Act claim? That's the problem I'm having.
Well, we would allege, again, what I've gone through, that they were expecting to win the termination challenge. That, again, the reasons why, even given today, were not accurate. And again, I know the court did not accept our request to take judicial notice with regard to the loss of the contract and why Ms. Johnson and Mr. Primes happened to be terminated, but that would go into a new complaint.
Thank you, counsel.
I'm going to say that it was only prospective.
grant motions to amend. The first order read this way, Your Honor.
The first order dated.
Well, it was filed December 10th, 2015.
What was the date of the 2015? Okay, it was dated a bit later.
And if one looks at page 5 of that order, it says, plaintiff's warrant and claim is denied without prejudice to raising the issue with a more developed record. And then there's footnote 2. If you go back, go to the end of that order, and it says, in the conclusion, based on the analysis above, the court grants in part and denies in part defendant's motion to dismiss. The court denies defendant's motion as to plaintiff's warrant claim without prejudice. And the court grants defendant's motion to plaintiff's Section 301 claim, essentially.
Yeah, but then in that order dated February 5, 2016, she says, oh, you had a chance to amend. You refiled a First Amendment complaint without making any changes. And the problem I see, and I'm looking at page 6, which is AER09, that basically she's saying the defendants couldn't have violated the Warrant Act because at the time your clients could not reasonably have been expected to have experienced an employment loss since they'd already been laid off months before.
And that was not what she had said before. So,
okay, I think we have your argument. And thank you.
Thank you.
The case is argued and submitted. We'll get your decision as soon as we can.